One of the things that has been in the news for the last number of days is cannabis. Proposals to liberalise the laws on cannabis and other illegal drugs are expected to be brought before the Cabinet in the coming weeks, and the plans do envisage a move to providing drug counselling and addiction treatment and health interventions for many users found in possessions of small amounts of drugs. And that's on one side, but on the other side, a group of 20 senior doctors only yesterday warned about the increasingly relaxed attitudes towards cannabis being undeserved because of the pressure that cannabis is causing for particularly young people's mental health. To discuss the ongoing debate about where cannabis fits in our society, I'm joined now by Dr. Gareth McGovern, who is a GP specialising in addiction at the Priory Clinic in Dundrum. Gareth, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Ciara.
It seems to me, and we'd like to have this conversation, that there's a couple of things going on. One is there is medicinal cannabis and there are pros and cons to medicinal cannabis. And one is, the other thing really, is recreational cannabis, and there are probably pros and cons to recreational cannabis. And it seems, when I hear these debates had on radio and elsewhere, that it's all getting a bit muddied and people are conflating the two and mixing them up. Can you tease this out for people a little bit? Because people, I think, are confused about whether or not they need to legalise cannabis in order for a child with epilepsy, for example, to get medicinal cannabis. What is the actual current situation?
Well, there are probably, thanks, Ciara, there are probably about three kind of separate issues. There is the medicinalisation of cannabis, I suppose, which is, to me, one separate issue. Now, I know a lot of cannabis activists will disagree with me. They believe it's one plant with every use that you can think of. I don't share that view. I think medicinal cannabis is a very different thing to recreational cannabis. And just to say, I mean, medicinal cannabis, there is half the states in the US have medicinal cannabis available. It's available in a lot of countries around the world. There isn't any evidence of a Trojan horse or a gateway to cannabis use or problematic cannabis use. So I think we need to separate that out, and I don't think that has any place in this argument. And I believe, and my own view is that the letter yesterday, it kind of did conflate that issue slightly. So I'd like to keep that separate. The other issue then is recreational cannabis. And there are two issues there. Should it be decriminalised or should it be made legal? I mean, the government, Department of Health, has come out with a statement saying they've no plans anytime soon to legalise cannabis. So in a way, it's a little bit of a futile argument. I don't think it's going to happen soon. My own view is I would like to see it legalised. My views are very well known on this issue. I suppose the real big issue, should it be criminalised? Should people who use cannabis, either for recreational purposes, who don't seem to come to any problem, which is about 90% of cannabis users, and indeed should people who have problems with cannabis, should they be under the, open to prosecution? And that, I believe, is the low-lying fruit in this. I think decriminalisation really needs to happen sooner rather than later.
I have read and I have heard what the doctors that Ray Wally, for example, who is a GP in the North Inner City, have said about it. And they would argue, and I put it to you, that it is a gateway drug. They would argue that the mental health difficulties in terms of depression, psychosis, demotivation and all that, particularly among young users who use it heavily, and there are quite a lot of young users who use it heavily, that we're not hearing enough about it. We're hearing a kind of a, and I think they have there's a grain of truth. We're hearing the constant minimizing, I suppose, of it. And they are concerned, and I would always have concerns around this too, that there are forces at work. Because the likes of big tobacco are behind big cannabis now and the CBD oils and all of those things. This is straight out of the playbook for big tobacco. And indeed, in the States, a huge amount of the cannabis production is in corporate hands that would have been previously tobacco companies. And do you not, as a doctor, have some concerns around that? Because we know how nefarious the actions of big tobacco are.
Well, I mean, we can argue who's behind it. I mean, the question is, should it be legalised? Should it be made available so that we know the dose of this drug? Should we be able to give advice? And you have to remember that I treat cannabis addiction. So I'm not someone who is kind of completely disregarding this. I have to say that the amount of it that I heard yesterday in terms of tripling of people coming and the common reason for admissions, it's the most commonly used illicit drug by a mile. So it stands to reason that there will be more people probably coming from it. I don't personally see that myself. The big issue I have, Ciara, is if it is as bad as people are saying, and if it is causing all these problems, it is causing those problems in a system and a paradigm of prohibition. And I kind of wonder if we're not getting it right in prohibition, what should we be doing to get this right? I think we need to change it. If it's not working the way it's happening, I don't think making these laws more draconian and more rigid is going to make that situation better. And that's what the international research will tell us.
When we talk about prohibition, you may have said it yourself, and I'm not saying that you have, but I've heard many people say prohibition doesn't work, and they talk about alcohol, for example. Prohibition doesn't work. And that may be true, because obviously drugs flood the market, whether there's prohibition or not, and then you have criminality. But even parking the criminality element of things. If you look at the two drugs that we have legalised, Garrett, we have alcohol and we have cigarettes. Huge problems for our health service. 8% of the health budget goes on alcohol alone. Supposing cannabis matches that, are we really going to say that it is worth us? Because I think the idea is if something becomes more widely used because it's legalised, that more problems will ensue from it. Are we really going to say that we're going to now have 8% on alcohol and now 8% in addition to that on cannabis? Do we want that? We have a lot of problems with the legal drugs we have that aren't prohibited.
Yeah.
And I think that it's quite easy for the soundbite prohibition doesn't work. But what do we do if cannabis becomes extremely widely used and suddenly it's siphoning off massive amounts of our health budget?
Well, I think an answer to the alcohol and tobacco, I mean, whatever harms, I mean, we certainly haven't regulated alcohol. We've done a better job with tobacco, and even then our smoking rates are still too high. I mean, in relation to alcohol, we haven't got the regulation of alcohol right at all. We've got a huge problem in this country, and that's the drug really that's causing easily most harm. But I have to say this, Ciara, could you imagine tomorrow if alcohol was banned? I mean, where would we be? The harm associated with alcohol being prohibited, the harm would exponentially rise. So I know we haven't got that right, but that's the problem. We haven't got the regulation of that drug right with things like alcohol advertising, minimum unit pricing. We certainly haven't got that right. And there are concerns. And let me say this, legalisation isn't a panacea. So if people think that the drug gets legalised tomorrow and we won't have problems associated with it, of course we'll have problems. But if you look at the jurisdictions that, particularly in the States, places like Colorado and California, they've had it legalised for a number of years, so they've been able to evaluate it, and there hasn't been this exponential rise in problematic cannabis use. There hasn't been increases in crime. So in the jurisdictions that are doing this, it seems to be working quite well. Plus, I know we're allowed to talk about the tax take in relation to alcohol. People seem to get very edgy about the tax take in terms of cannabis. The tax take in Colorado last year was something like 300 million. I mean, 300 million, and they have a population of about 6 million. Not that much different than Ireland. I mean, that's a lot of money. Look at our housing crisis. Look at where we could spend that money. We're wasting it. And that's just the tax take, never mind the amount of money it costs to police it.
But is some of the concern not that even in the jurisdictions where they have legalised, and yes, you know, as you say, maybe there isn't a huge rise in criminality. You would actually expect it to go down slightly, I would imagine, because you can now buy it in the equivalent of a liquor store, but it's a cannabis facility. That's a given. But because it is so much more readily available, is it not the case that there is still, and I think there are stats to bear this out, a black market, a thriving black market? Because in the exact same way that when I walk into an off-licence, very often young fellas outside and go, Mrs, would you buy us a few cans? And I go, no, go away.
Yeah.
But other people kind of go, oh yeah, maybe, particularly if they're only a couple of years older or whatever. It is a leaky sieve. Regulation is a leaky sieve for all of these things. And I take what you're saying. Would we prohibit alcohol? Yeah. I think you can never put that genie back in the bottle. That's part of the problem. But even if you didn't prohibit alcohol, if you were looking at alcohol now and talking about introducing it as a new legal drug, I think we'd have a very hard debate about it. There are definitely pros and cons, and we haven't even gotten into the medicinal side of things because I think that's a separate issue, but in terms of legalizing it as a recreational drug, are you concerned about the fact that it will be hard to regulate, and the fact in the same way that alcohol, the average first age of drinking in this country is 14, we heard that in the news earlier, it's probably something similar for weed.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it that if you don't regulate it properly, I think alcohol is a good example, you'll get a black market. That's exactly what happens. If the black market is more attractive cost-wise than the legal market, if you make it too rigid, then yes, people will use the black market. But I mean, my view is I think we need to try it. This is not...
But if we try it, Garrett, and it goes wrong, it's very like we can't get rid of alcohol out of our society. We probably won't be able to get rid of cannabis if it isn't a success.
I don't think so, because to be fair, Ciara, I don't think there are many people that don't use cannabis, would never use cannabis, and will never use cannabis. I don't think it's the same drug in that regard. Whether you can close the, I mean, you could do it on a basis, on a trial basis, and you could evaluate it. I mean, the one problem I have with illegal cannabis is we can't really do any meaningful research on an illicit drug. It's just so difficult.
Pop on your headphones for a second, Gareth, if you don't mind, because John, one of our listeners, is on the line. John, you think we should be growing cannabis here. Tell me why.
So I think if we follow a legalisation route, and I absolutely agree that we can't actually do any meaningful research because everything is kind of grossly misrepresented. I think New Zealand is probably one of the very few countries that actually have substantive research done on this. But I think if we look at the cannabis industry currently, essentially, we're sending any person who wishes to obtain it to their local drug dealer and supplying cash flow to criminal gangs.
Yeah.
If you look at the Garda and custom resources used to combat that and think about it in a different way, if we had a regulated and taxed industry here supplying and dispensing cannabis to people over the age of 18, you would have the Garda resources freed up. You'd have people not going to see their local drug dealer, and you could do some meaningful research over the next 5 years, and we could become a centre of excellence within Europe for cannabis-related treatment for pain relief. Incidentally, I think Queen Elizabeth even used cannabis for pain relief for menstrual cramps, and then like that, also the potential treatment in cancer. So there's a huge opportunity for the country here to be a leader within Europe on this.
Okay, I take those points. I'm going to put them to Gareth. Thank you for that, John. Gareth, what do you think about that? Let's talk for a moment about medicinal cannabis. Mm. We're both doctors. I would suggest that a huge amount of the claims about what it does from a health point of view are overblown.
Yeah, they perhaps are. I have my own view on medicinal cannabis is very straightforward. I think the efficacy issue is the secondary issue. I think the safety issue is the primary issue. And it would appear to me that if not all, certainly the vast majority of people are using medicinal cannabis, conventional medicine, for one reason and another has failed. So they're trying to use this medication. It'll either work or it won't work. We've plenty of our own medications and conventional medicine that don't work. And if it's safe, and it seems to be safe, I don't see what the problem is. I would agree. There are people who will push medicinal cannabis in terms of how efficacious it is.
You heard even what John said there. John, obviously, well, I don't know John's background, but John was saying, as a cure for cancer and things. You do hear that it's a cure for cancer, but the evidence is not there to support that.
Yeah, I'd accept that. I mean, the best evaluation I've seen in terms of the research out there, and even is the Barnes report, and Professor Barnes will admit himself that trying to get these, some of the studies are not good. The methodologies in them are not good. But it looks at a range of conditions. And interestingly enough, one of the best, and it's not a condition, it's more symptoms, chronic pain. That seems to be where the most relief is, the best evidence. And yet when the HPRA kind of evaluated it, they dismissed that. And I'm not really quite sure why they did that. So, as I say, I can't stress enough, it's the safety of this product that is more important than the efficacy. That's my own view.
Just on that, because I agree with you, there is evidence to suggest it works for chronic pain, and there is evidence to suggest that it works quite well for certain neurological conditions. I think, not even to go down that rabbit hole, but there are neurological conditions that it does work for.
Yeah.
And so I have no issue with legalising medicinal cannabis for roots. But I don't actually agree with you that it's all about the safety and not about the efficacy, because I think, like any other drug, we shouldn't turn off our critical faculties around cannabis. It should still be benefit versus risk. We should be weighing those two things up at the same time and working out if it's worth doing or not.
Yeah, I accept that. But I mean, in the end of the day, you have to remember, I go back to it. These are people, I mean, if you've ever talked to anyone, and I've done a lot of work with people who suffer from some of the most horrible illnesses, particularly vulnerable people like the elderly and the young, and they cannot get relief from any conventional medicine. It just has not worked. And they have got benefit from illicit cannabis. They're breaking the law in order to get benefit. I just think that's wrong.
I think there is evidence for things like chronic pain for sufferers and stuff like that. Ian is also on the line. Ian, you're very welcome. You use cannabis yourself. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I've had like a mental health condition, depression, anxiety, for about 10 years, and been on a citralopram all that time.
Okay.
And it worked fine. But about 2 years ago, this whole issue cropped up in debates and talk shows and so forth.
Uh-huh.
So I did a bit of research and looked around it and, you know, just heard your previous guest there talk about the efficacy of it and so forth. And I decided it was something I'd like to try. So I found a source, let's say. And that person's actually a chemist, so I can trust him. And he provides us with what I need, really, which is a mixture. I have CBD in the morning and take THC in the evening before bed.
Okay.
And the symptom-wise, it's been really...
Are you taking it in oil form? Are you taking it in tablet
oil.
Form? Oil. Okay.
Oil form, yeah. Yeah, not a smoker, so
okay.
I didn't want to smoke. But, yeah, so I take that in oil form, and it's like 3 or 4 dabs of CBD in the morning just to get me to work. And
what difference do you feel, Ian, that it makes to you?
Oh, I've reduced my... so I've told my doctor this as well. So I've reduced my pill dosage by half during that time in the last 2 years.
Is your antidepressant, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And what I do like sleep tracking and stuff, you know, the monitors that you can have.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can see that my sleep pattern is so much better. It's much more stable. I don't seem to be waking up in the middle of the night as I used to. So you get a good night's sleep. It relaxes you. And it just gives me energy for the daytime. And I do a lot of exercise on top. So it really helps me on the exercise as well, I believe.
Okay.
And obviously it's just purely... you know, it's a purely experiment of one person.
Yeah, yeah. You know, no, but
so
you have felt benefit of it. I'll bring you back in, Gart. I mean, some alarm bells go off because there are loads of drugs that some people might benefit from. I'm thinking of old fashioned ones like barbiturates and laudanum and all sorts of things that we used in the past for mental health reasons. And maybe some people benefit, but there was huge fallout for other people. Have you concerns around people self-medicating with cannabis? Because I think there's an awful lot of recreational users who just tell themselves that it's good for them. And I'm not necessarily judging anyone for that. But all I'm saying is a lot of people there is something about almost this belief that people have invested in cannabis, that it is some kind of a panacea.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the self-medicating thing, unfortunately, they're forced into it really to a large degree, aren't they? I mean, medicinal cannabis isn't really available here. I mean, it's very...
On a named basis, yeah.
On a very named basis, but it isn't really available. So in those circumstances, they are self-medicating. And look, as doctors, we don't like people to self-medicate. We like them to medicate under medical supervision and get good advice. So, yeah, I have concerns about it, but they're forced into it. That's the problem.
Okay. Christy is also on the line. Christy, you are a retired Garda, I believe, and you think we should be paying attention to medical professionals. Explain that to me.
Well, I was listening to the arguments between, and I read the article in the paper signed by 20 professionals,
yeah.
And I thought, yeah, I mean, I would always go on the side of medical professionals. I'd always err on the side of caution. I've dealt with it as a frontline responder for many years in the drug squad, and I've seen the effects of drugs in general, but also with cannabis. And with cannabis, there is a psychosis. And I think we're getting a bit tied up just talking about recreational cannabis,
yeah,
and medical cannabis as well. And sometimes those lines are getting a little bit blurred.
I agree.
Along the way. And I think we have to be very, very careful if we're going to legalize and we're going to go down that road of legalization. I think it's all very well listen to the populist rhetoric sometimes, but I think the danger is inherent there that we don't know enough about it. We hear the odd report of how it's affected certain people in certain ways. No two people are alike, and cannabis has that effect that it does eventually can cause serious mental health issues such as
it can. And can I ask you what I have you, Christy? Because a lot of people are texting in as a pro legalization thing, saying it will free up Garda time because guards spend half their time running around chasing people with cannabis. Is that the case? It does pursuing cannabis prosecutions really amount to a huge amount of things? My understanding was that there was almost a tacit, if somebody had a small amount of weed on them, that guards were kind of going, well, that's not the end of the world, and they were actually pursuing other types of drugs more aggressively than that.
Thankfully, Well, thankfully we had discretion whether to use that and get them an adult caution. And there is a system whereby adult cautions can be used as well. And I'm glad, I hope that discretion is still being kept in the Garda Síochána and a bit of common sense can prevail. But the big problem for, and I've seen it with, especially with a lot of the young people that I've dealt with over the years, that the increased use of cannabis leads to harder drugs. And that's the biggest concern. It's all very well talking about the legalization of something, but remember, this is a drug. The THC in cannabis has increased quite substantially over the years. And we've seen in America where they have legalized it in certain states in America, and they have increased mental health problems because of the increased use of it. So I'd just be very, and I would always err on the side of the professionals, the medical professionals who are dealing with it and the people on the front line who are dealing with it. I mean, if it helps, and I'm sure the case is well highlighted, that the woman from Cork whose daughter was getting epileptic fits and seizures, and she says that she's 2 years free. And I'm delighted for her, I really am. But nobody knows or nobody can tell us that if we use it on a consistent basis in 10 or 15 or 20 years' time, how that will affect that young girl, or she'll be a young woman by then. How it'll affect her down the road.
I do think there's probably little argument, Christy, against the use of it for someone like Ava Toomey, because I think that's the only thing has controlled her seizures, in fairness to the family.
It has been legalised, and there's 20 licences being handed out for that use, and it has to be very restricted for
But you have concerns around it all.
I would have. Yeah.
Okay, look, thank you for that. Loads of texts coming in, loads of calls coming in. We might take a short break. McGovern will stay with me as well. And we'll take more of, I suppose, your reaction on this debate on cannabis after this. Now, just before the break, we were discussing the debate that is, I suppose, ongoing throughout society about whether or not we should legalise recreational cannabis or medicinal cannabis, and loads of people getting involved. Someone says, we need to treat cannabis and drug addiction as a medical issue, not a criminal issue. We need to take control of the drug trade out of the hands of the gangs by regulating it. Without the huge profits, the gangs will be weakened. There's some truth in that. And someone else says, how much Garda resources is actually used on people who have cannabis? It is virtually legal already. And you did hear what Christy said. He said there is some discretion that guards have around things like cannabis, that they don't maybe take it the same way that they would opioids or things like that. Someone says, Kira, my wife works in an emergency department, and to her, who's only ever seen the worst case outcomes of any activity, everything is dangerous and helmets should be worn to wash the dishes. Professionals in mental health also only ever see the worst case outcome. Where is the professional who specialises in the pleasure or relief most people who use cannabis obtain? I take your point, and you're not wrong, except for we can't ignore the worst case scenarios, which most people don't see. And maybe that's the opposite argument to that. And someone says GP's flippant use of painkillers and sleeping tablets is a bigger problem and just as addictive. Actually, sleeping tablets are far more addictive, and they're used less than you think, to be honest. Garrett McGovern, doctor and indeed addiction specialist, is still in surgery with me, and lots of people on the line, including John. John, you have no problem with people using medicinal cannabis, but you do with recreational cannabis. Tell me why.
Well, people suffering from cancer and stuff like that, and Vera Toomey was mentioned, whose daughter was getting, I think, something like 40 seizures a day, and she's now seizure-free.
Yeah.
So no one could have a problem with that. But what I would have a major problem with, Kayla, is the very fact for legalising it, which is for recreation purposes. Like, first of all, what strength do you set it at? If you set it at a certain strength, right, then you're going to get the guys going to the criminality, and they're looking for the stronger stuff. So I think at the moment, you see the latest reports out again, we still can't come to tell them, Mr. Taylor, with the alcohol abuse right in this country, right? I mean,
true.
People are starting at a very young age, and not so young. But the problem is, if you introduce and legalise another mind-altering substance into our psyche here in this country at the moment, I think you might as well take a shovel to the place and bury it. I think it will be absolute insane. Now, it was also mentioned there about the amount of money that's taken in some states in America, where that money could be spent on building social houses. So the answer to the social housing problem is to legalise cannabis, the way people can get out of their head. Possibly the same people are living in the social houses again, and the circus goes on and on and on.
I think, John, with all due respect, that cannabis is not a respecter of class, and it is as commonly used in UCD and Trinity as it is in any social housing estate.
I was just going to get to that. That's the problem as well, Kira, because in the 80s there was a stigma about, drugs and heroin and everything. It was associated with only certain people in society or in certain parts of the country, right? But the landscape has changed in the last couple of years. There is no personal respect for people, for their own health, their general health, their families, society in general, and it's now socially acceptable that drugs are part of society. And I think to legalise cannabis for recreation purposes would be absolutely insane.
Okay. Look, thank you for that, John. Thank you. Thank you for that indeed. Somebody else says, Kira, I lived in the Netherlands for years. It was clear that cannabis is only a stepping stone drug, as the same people in Ireland sell cannabis that sell harder drugs. Where it is legal, the normal user wouldn't even know where to buy cocaine or other drugs. I'm a regular user with a family and a good job, and I never break the law in any other area of my life apart from smoking weed. We did mention Vera Toomey on one or two occasions during this debate. Vera Toomey's daughter Ava is on medicinal cannabis, and Vera herself has gotten in touch with the show and is on the line. You're very welcome, Vera.
Hello, Kira. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks.
Gareth McGovern is here with me as well. What do you think, Vera, when you
hear... Hello, Gareth. He's a great man to represent the cause. He really is.
Talk to me about what you think when you hear these debates, Vera.
Well, I heard Ava's name mentioned there, the Garda, the gentleman that came on, and I just wanted to say that he was concerned about what her life would be like into the future. I just wanted to call just to say that Ava's life was in imminent danger.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's important because I think over the last couple of days, the two issues between recreation and medical have been, you know, they've been conflicted. So the result of Ava on medical CBD and THC is that she's in school again today.
Good stuff.
And when you hear things like populist rhetoric being mentioned, it's very depressing because people who are on medical cannabis aren't interested in populist rhetoric at all. They're interested in results. They're interested in the reduction of pain, the elimination of seizures and so forth. And that's what we have experienced with our daughter and what many other people around the country are experiencing themselves and for their families. So I think that's very important to say.
Can I ask you, Vera, though, do you have any concern about people maybe who are wanting recreational cannabis to be legalised, who are maybe jumping on the bandwagon of cases like Ava, who clearly needed it as a medicinal treatment?
You see, Kira, they can jump on the bandwagon of medical cannabis if they wish, but they are two completely separate issues. Medical cannabis is a treatment for people who are in imminent danger and in our situation where we have exhausted all other avenues. Now, in my opinion, we should not have had to exhaust all other pharmaceutical options before we tried medical cannabis because of its resulting success for my daughter. However, you know, recreational cannabis is a completely different issue. And hear terms like a gateway drug, you know, in terms of medical cannabis, and I do think it's important that when you talk about cannabis, that you're specific, that you're talking about medical cannabis and recreational cannabis are two completely different issues.
Yes.
In the sense that my daughter is on 10% CBD and she is on 2% THC.
Yeah.
She is not on a street type of THC, which could be something up to 15 or 20%, which is a completely different issue entirely. So the two products are not related at all. You know?
I know, so I do. Let me bring Gareth back in because he's sitting here. You're hearing what Vera is saying, and you know, I think you'd be hard pressed to find someone who would argue against the use of medicinal cannabis for Ava. Clearly, she's improved on it, and it must have been a very difficult road for the Toomey family. I don't think anyone could argue other than that, or they'd be kind of stupid. But do you take on board at all, Gareth, what I just asked Vera there about the fact that people like using cases like Ava to sort of push through? And I know, Vera, you don't like the talk of Trojan horses and you don't like the talk of that. I get that. But that people...
But would you, Kira, to be honest, would you like your daughter to be represented as a Trojan horse to be to, for the implication to be made that you were disingenuous about.
Oh no, but
you
I don't think you are. I'm not referring to you when I say that. What I suppose I'm saying is that not that you are doing such a thing, but that there are other people who have a cause around cannabis who like highlighting your case. You obviously were fighting for your daughter who was sick. That's a kind of a separate thing, though. Do you know what I mean?
It is a separate thing, and that's exactly my point, because there are hundreds and thousands of us within this country who are fighting for that, and we're not interested in a gateway drug.
Yeah.
I view medical cannabis as a gateway to hope.
Yeah.
It's a gateway to your future. It's provided my daughter with the ability to be able to go to school, to smile as she's leaving the house in the morning because she knows she's going to school. She's aware. She's interacting. She's got a life that is pain-free. She's playing with her sisters and her brother. She's having the life that she deserves.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't doubt that for a moment for you. And as I have actually said many, I don't know if you know I have, but I have said many times, I think you'd be mad to try and argue against someone like Ava getting medicinal cannabis because she needed it and it has helped her.
Yeah, it has. Look, I'm glad to hear you saying it.
Yes, no, and I do think that. I genuinely do. Thank you for coming on and speaking to us, Vera. I'll give the last word to you, Garrett. I mean, this is an ongoing debate. I don't know where we're going to go. We're not going to solve it today, but I don't know where we're going to go as a society, because I'm looking at the text line and it's very divided.
I mean, in relation to the Trojan horse,
I wasn't suggesting, just to be clear for a moment, that Vera is trying to put...
No, I know that. But I saw that in the letter yesterday about the Trojan horse, and I'm eager to hear what they mean by Trojan horse. I get the impression that Trojan horse in this case is that either people will misuse cannabis or else try and get medicinal cannabis, try and get cannabis legalised through medicinal cannabis. I'm confused with the Trojan horse. The gateway issue is been largely disproven, Ciara. I mean, I work in very, very heavy end social disadvantaged areas with heroin use, and if anybody thinks that people are now heroin addicts because they have started taking cannabis, they know very, very little about the socioeconomic and social factors related to heroin use. So there's a lot of, I mean, if we're going to have this debate, I would say this, it needs to be an honest debate. And I don't think point scoring and trying to prove your, I mean, Twitter over the last few days has just been full of studies plucked out of everywhere to suit each other's side. And I don't think that's the way we should debate this. The way we should debate this is debate it honestly and openly. And we need... You're dead right, Ciara. If there are people coming to harm, and there's no doubt there are people coming to harm from cannabis, we need to reduce that harm. And we need to be able to educate young people, but not educate them in the way we have been doing, because education programs worldwide have failed. So we need to think of a more novel way of doing that.
Look, thank you very much for coming in and talking to me. That is Garrett McGovern, their doctor and addiction specialist. We might get more of your reaction after this, but let's take a short break. We did talk at the top of the show as well about the debate that's going on our airways and in our newsrooms, but also in our society, I think, about what we should do about cannabis. Should we legalise it? Should we legalise it for recreational use? Should we legalise it for medicinal use? Should we decriminalise it? Should we do nothing at all? And lots of people getting involved. And Brenda, one of our listeners, is on the line. Brenda, what's your own personal experience with cannabis?
My personal experience is that my son was caught last weekend. By the guards, he was stopped, he was tested, he'd been obviously recreational cannabis, and the problem is that his dad died 3 years ago, and obviously he was finding it really hard to cope, and I tried for counselling and different things, and obviously, I've had him at the doctor since, and he's dipping his toe in on medication. But obviously, I'm trying to explain to him that you can't do both. The doctor's trying to explain you can't do both. He seems to think, his age seems to think that wacky backy or cannabis, whatever you want to call it, that it has great medicinal purpose.
Yeah.
Now, I'm for cannabis for cancer, their dad died of cancer. I'm for it for any, you know, health problems, children with epilepsy, anything that helps medical wise, prescribed local doctor. I can't see why it shouldn't be when it's needed, but I think the younger age are under the impression that it's not addictive, that it won't lead to something else, that it's okay.
Yeah.
And to me, it's not okay. he will lose his license now, which is obviously maybe a good kick up the arse that he needs to. But I don't know, because like I said, and then they're saying it does cause mental health problems. So if he didn't have one in the first place, well, then he probably will end up with one, because I just think it must be killing off his brain cells. You know, like, I mean,
do you feel upset, Brendan, because obviously your son has lost his dad to cancer, and maybe he is having a tough time, which I would have every expectation that he could be with that kind of sad history. But do you feel upset that you're saying to me, I'm trying to get help for him, but it's probably a lot harder to get help for him than it is for him to get cannabis?
Do you know
what I mean? It's really easy to get cannabis, but trying to get counselling is like hen's teeth.
Now, he's had counselling, like I said, and like, it's counselling, it doesn't always get to the root of the problem, or doesn't always help everybody, I guess.
Yeah.
But I just think there's no talking to them. I mean, obviously, like I said, he's had that from school, from secondary school.
Yeah.
And I know it's in the schools. And like, he's the oldest of six. And I said, if that's the road I'm on with the first, the oldest, I just don't know what hope I have. You know, like, I'm sure you're
very worried, and obviously you're a single mum now, and it's extremely hard for you. When you tried to talk to him about the dangers and saying, look, criminal records, etc., did it fall on deaf ears or no?
Yeah, I think like they think, well, they won't get caught or they won't be stopped or whatever. But like, obviously, I don't want him to have a criminal record, and I want him to have the opportunities of, you know, that it won't be held against him if he decided to go to Canada or Australia or wherever. That obviously, it wasn't like he was supplying. It was the fact he had a small amount on him, personal use, but I don't condone it.
The talk of, you know, you might get a criminal record, you won't be able to travel. Did that impact on him at all?
No, because if it had impacted, he wouldn't have got caught. He'd have made sure.
It's obviously very, very widely available, in fairness.
Yeah, it must be. I mean, like, I will say now, I was in holidays in England, and you could smell it on the streets.
Yeah.
On the streets. And I tell you, I thought maybe it's widely and not great here. I actually was horrified. I used to live over there, and these were areas I used to walk in. And I couldn't believe the difference in 10 years, say, from when I used to live there to when I just went on holidays. You could smell it on young dads with children, and all I could foresee was, I pray that won't be my son.
Yeah. You're obviously worrying about the situation.
Yeah, I'm worried sick that obviously he's flushing his life down the pan over something he seems to think is okay.
Okay. Look, thank you for coming on and talking to us, Brenda. And I think a lot of parents probably have similar worries. They're worried about their young kids, not even young kids, but teenagers, etc., using it and maybe getting a criminal record, getting themselves in trouble with the law at a very young age, maybe not understanding that, you know, those things can stay with you and bite you in the ass, literally, as you're older too. Jason is on the line though too. Jason, you smoke cannabis. You have been for about 20 years. Why did you start? Was it recreational?
Hi, Ciara.
How are you?
Thanks for having me on your show. I enjoy your show. Thank you. I was diagnosed with adult sudden death syndrome at 19. And basically, I was told that I couldn't smoke, I couldn't drink, I had to do this, I had to do that, and I was given 10 years. So I went off traveling abroad, and that's when I started smoking cannabis. Now, I brought that habit home with me. I'm now 46, so that's what, 20-odd years now I've been smoking it. All types of varieties. I gave it up last year, just because I felt it was I had children and I wanted to give it up, etc. And I've given up it in the past as well, for various different reasons, for jobs, etc. It takes me about a day and a half, 2 days to give it up. It's mostly psychological. If you've got any psychological will at all, it's quite an easy drug to give up. The idea that it's a gateway drug is totally ludicrous, because the only reason it's a gateway drug is because it's illegal. So it's the pushers who are out there who are selling unregulated cannabis resin to the uneducated, and then they're selling them this. Oh, here, have a try of this. And that's why it's a gateway drug, is because the dealers have control of it and the government refuses to step in and do anything about it.
I hear you, but if that is the case, then it's not true to say it's a gateway drug is ludicrous, because it is a gateway drug if you're going to the shop and they sell milk and butter beside each other. You know what I mean? You might say it's a gateway drug because of it being illegal, but you can't say that it's a gateway drug because it's illegal, and that saying it's a gateway drug.
Well, the way it's been argued that it is a gateway drug, i.e., if you sell cannabis, you're going to be on heroin next. That's what I'm talking about, okay. Kira. It isn't the case. I've been smoking it for 25 years, and I'm not on heroin.
Can I ask you?
I can give it up.
Yeah, no, and I accept that you're obviously not. But can I ask you a question? You said you've tried, not that you've tried, but you've given it up once or twice, but you've always gone back on it. Why did you go back on it, having tried to give it up?
Because on advice of my cardiologist the last time I saw him, I've always maintained throughout my diagnosis with my various different cardiologists, and I've seen the best in the British Isles and in France.
Okay.
So quite a lot of educated minds have talked to me about my heart condition.
Okay.
And I would say 99% of them would agree that, yes, it could possibly do me some good.
You're saying your cardiologists have advised you to smoke cannabis?
Yes, they had not advised me directly. They said that it could do you some good. That's what they've said to me.
Right.
They haven't said go away and buy it, Jason.
Okay. Do you smoke it with tobacco, or do you smoke it with just itself?
No, I smoke it pure out of a pipe.
Okay.
And out of a, you can guess humidifiers, but they take the tar, etc. So there's various ways you can smoke it.
Okay.
You don't have to use tobacco.
Okay.
But I mean, the reason I go back onto it, and the reason I went back onto it last year, because I went into a near fatal arrhythmia, and my cardiologist said, I saw you a year ago, Jason, and you were much thinner. You'd lost, or you've put on a hell of a lot of weight. I said, yeah, I gave up cannabis. So instead of cannabis, you end up eating. So actually, there must be some type of additive inside the. It's not just the plant. It's not just the plant by itself. So there must be some type of chemical derivative that is inside the plant, which is beneficial to losing weight. Because as soon as I started smoking again, which was 2 months ago, I've lost 5 kilos in weight. Now, you tell me any diet out there that'll lose me 5 kilos in weight, because it's an appetite suppressant. You eat when you need to eat when you're hungry, not just as oh, I feel the need for gratification with this, or oh, I feel that, or I feel that. I don't eat 3 square meals a day. I eat porridge in the morning, and I eat a good lunch or a good dinner. And because of that, I've lost weight. And because of that, I have less arrhythmias. And because of that, my life has much more longevity. I can go to my doctor, and I can get Valium, diazepam, whatever the hell I want. Okay,
over. Can you?
And I have to pay for it. And I can get medication which is slowly killing me. No problem whatsoever. I'm sure you, as a doctor, you have prescribed cordrone or beta blockers in the past. And the detrimental effect it has on people. Now, the government and the state has no problem inviting the likes of Pfizer's, etc., into this country and tax the hell out of them. We are paying through the nose for our medication. Yes, other liberal countries, like Switzerland, for example, who made that drug legal, and in 2000, it actually made Time magazine, the front cover of Time magazine,
cannabis the fastest growing industry in Switzerland. Now, if you actually thought of Switzerland, would you think that the fastest growing industry in Switzerland was cannabis? You wouldn't. You'd think watches, banking, chocolates, etc.,
yeah,
etc. They did it well.
I suppose all I can say is I don't know what to say to you, because obviously you have your own personal experience of it, but most people's experience of it, most of the evidence doesn't suggest that it's particularly good for your health, apart from in some limited circumstances around pain and around neurological conditions, that there's little else to support it medically. But the other thing about it is most people find that they, you know, cancer patients and things take cannabis in order to put on weight. So you're an anomaly a little bit with the weight loss, because a lot of people use it as an appetite stimulant. So I don't know what to say, but look, I'm interested in what people have to say about this, but thank you for coming on. Someone else says, I have friends from college who smoked cannabis back then in the 80s. Decades later, some continue to smoke cannabis now on a daily basis. You can see how their physical and mental health has been impacted as the years went on, and in some cases their careers and relationships slowly slipped away. Very sad to people who had so much potential to live, ending up living what seems like a half life. And that's from Patricia. I actually kind of agree with you, Patricia. I think anybody that uses regular psychotropic drugs, anyone who uses drugs that have an action on their central nervous system on a daily basis like that, that alter them, are probably living a half life, because you're drugged and there's no two ways about it. And if you are drugged, you are drugged. Someone says, I'm a business owner, I pay my taxes, I obey the law, apart from one aspect, I am a cannabis consumer. Why should I be prosecuted for smoking a plant? Could we not look at the Spanish model of decriminalisation and allowing co-ops where profit is never allowed, take the power and the money away from the drug cartels, allow adults to be responsible for their own health? Yeah, maybe we can. I think we're certainly having a debate on it. And Daniel is on the line. Daniel, you have OCD, is that correct? And you're taking cannabis for that. Am I right?
You're dead right, yeah.
Okay, tell me about your experience.
So I developed OCD around about 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
And, you know, did therapy, did medication. You know, the medication like posamamol and fluoxetine, I think it's called.
Fluoxetine, yeah, could be.
And, yeah, it was fluoxetine. And well, they would target the chemical imbalance, if you get me.
Sure, yeah.
But the cannabis, like, they never, like, did anything. OCD is very, in that sense, when it comes to that kind of medication. But the cannabis targets the anxiety of it, and that's the symptom, say.
Okay.
And without the anxiety, OCD has no power, to get me.
I do. And so you does it have other effects on you, though? Because, like, a lot of people, in fairness, fluoxetine, a lot of people would take fluoxetine for anxiety, and it would, they would think that it worked. But what, like, I accept what you're saying, because loads of people are texting and telling me why they use it, and I'm not disbelieving anybody who has a story to tell. But equally, it can make you a bit dopey. It can, I mean, that's why it's called dope by some people. You know, it can make you a bit flat. There are effects it can have on you.
It can. Like, I wouldn't never purport that, like, cannabis is for everyone.
Yeah.
I'd never say that, like. I think most people should try it once, and if it's for you, you'll know, and if it's not, you'll know. And, like, but for me, the benefits vastly outweigh the negatives. Like, I've taken a tolerance break from cannabis right now. I stopped last, say, Sunday a week ago, and
yeah,
already I can feel anxiety kicking it up, way up, like, since I stopped.
Could it be, though, with respect to you, that the reason your anxiety is kicking off because you stopped is because you're in withdrawal from the cannabis that you've become dependent on? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's more than one reason why somebody might be anxious when they stop the cannabis.
I get what you're saying, but the anxiety is all OCD anxiety. It's all, like, making me wash my hands more. It's all doing that kind of stuff.
It's not
just anxiety for the sake of anxiety. Mm. It's all anxiety because my OCD things are happening.
I know, but when you get anxious, you develop the compulsions that are OCD. When somebody else gets anxious, it affects them a little bit differently. What I'm saying to you is, and I mean this in no disrespect, but it is,
yeah, no, of course.
It's entirely possible, Daniel, the reason that you get anxious when you stop your cannabis is because you're going into withdrawal from a drug, like the way people get anxious when they stop smoking. You know,
I get what you're saying, like, but I don't think so, because cannabis, like, had a huge effect on my OCD. Like, I just, like, I nearly beaten it when I was on it. And I'm not craving cannabis either, to diminish. Like, other than I'm feeling the anxiety, but I'm not, like, dying for a joint.
Okay.
If you get me. Which, if I was smoking regularly and I stopped for a few days, for those few days, I'd probably be dying for a joint. But after that, I'm fine on a joint.
Okay. All right. Look, thank you for coming on and talking to me. A lot of people coming on talking about how they like using cannabis. I don't know what you make of those calls, but anyway, let me know. We might take a short break and tell you about a fantastic competition just after this.